is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. The 13th Congressional District has gotten a lot of attention as well here in 2022 as we get ready to vote on November 8th for representatives in our newly drawn congressional districts. But this one stands out for a couple of reasons. And the biggest is because maybe for the first time in more than 70 years, Detroiters may not have black congressional representation in Washington. Back in 1955, Charles Diggs was the first African-American Detroiter elected to Congress. And since then, there has always been at least one African-American in Congress who represents the city. But this year, State Representative Sri Thanadar, who is an Indian American, has won the Democratic nomination for the 13th Congressional District over a really crowded field of African American Democratic candidates. And while he seems poised to win, he really has not claimed that seat quite yet, right? I mean, we got to wait to vote on November 8th and see how it comes out. Right now, he is being challenged by Republican Martell Bivings, who is an African-American Republican. Now, it's also notable that there are three African-American men who are running as Republicans to join Congress in January. There are no African-Americans representing the Democratic Party on the ballot for Congress in November. That is a really unusual set of circumstances, and it challenges voters, I think, to kind of sort through what representation means, what it looks like, and how you want to cast your vote on November 8th. We are really pleased to have Republican Martell Bivings with us today to talk about this. We are also still working with the campaign of Sri Thanadar to get him to come in to talk about his candidacy as well. But right now, Martell Bivings, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to have you here with us. So let's start with this. I think most voters may not be terribly familiar with you or your work. Tell us who you are and why you decided to run for Congress in the 13th District.
That is correct. I'm Martell Bivings. As stated, I'm a graduate of Cody High School, West Side. I call myself a West Side boy, but an East Side man, because I was born and reared on the West Side, but I purchased my first home and started my career on the East Side of Detroit. I am a graduate of Howard University, where I studied political science, legal communication. And it was at Howard that I fell in love with policy and knew that I would be one day running for office. And I fell in love with policy when we reviewed the 13th Amendment. And I said, wow, African Americans aren't really free in America, because the 13th Amendment just said slavery nor involuntary servitude shall be allowed in the United States, comma, except if one is duly punished of a crime. And that is when we began the mass incarceration of African Americans. In fact, in this very moment right now in America, there are more African American men that are in prison than there were the entire 400 years of slavery. And that's language. That's what language has the power to do, to give and to take. And that's when I fell in love with policy, and I said that is where you can alter lives and make things better in that United States House of Representatives. I'm running in this election cycle because prior to the primary, all the way back in January, when I started watching people coming in and saying they would do this and they would do that and they had videos, no one was speaking of substance. No one was speaking specifically to tax relief. No one was speaking to our senior citizens in the city of Detroit who have homes that they own but need repair, and they can't have the funding to repair their roof. No one was speaking to early childhood education. No one was speaking to tax relief and easier pathways for entrepreneurs to merge into entrepreneurship. And I said, this is enough. So I set my personal goals aside and decided to run. And who knew that I would be Detroit's last chance at representation? I mean, it goes beyond the fact that I'm black. What's really at the core of this is my skill set. my legislative background. I've worked in the United States Senate in Washington for Senator Carl Levin. I worked here in Detroit as a district director, policy advisor to Sherry Gaten Yogo, and a policy analyst for Councilman Scott Benson. And through all those things, I've instituted over 6 policy changes. I've brought saved over 500,000 to small business owners in the city of Detroit. And Sheree Tanadar is sitting in Lansing right now, and he has not authored one single bill. He has not created any type of relationships to bring gifts back to his district. He lacks the skill set. And Michigan only will have 13 representatives in January. And we need a representative from Detroit who has legislative skill set, has the ability to create relationships, to build upon, and the ability that the only thing that matters when you're a legislator is your ability to get the governor's signature or the president's signature on a bill, and it brings rewards to your district. And I'm the only person in this race that has that skill set who happens to be Black.
I will just note for listeners that if you want to know more about what Sheree Tanadar has done in Lansing, and he has sponsored and co-sponsored several pieces of legislation, but I know what you're talking about in terms of authoring legislation, Martel. But you can go to the Michigan legislature website and you can look all of that stuff up for yourself just to get that information. Okay, Martel, I want to talk about what issues you think are critical to people in this district that you want to represent, and what you would do in Washington, and what you would do as a Republican. And we're going to talk a little more about that a little later. But right here, address the things that you would hope to accomplish and how they fit or don't into the overall agenda of the party that you're a part of.
Well, the overall agenda of the party at the core is to be in power. And you are in power with the number of representatives in the House of Representatives, or you are in power with a majority of United States senators. And how a party stays in power is by crafting policy and getting rewards to the district so that those members can keep those seats. So the Republican Party is going to be one just as shocked as I am, as well as Detroit. Like, wow, we got Detroit? We have a Republican from Detroit. What is it that this member needs so that we keep this seat, so that we can stay in power? So that's first. And one of the things that I'm going to ask the party when they ask me, what can we do for you so we can keep this seat up? I say, hey, we need to cut taxes. Taxes need to be cut. We need to get back to energy independence, meaning we need to export our oil so we can cut inflation so that my people in Taylor and Romulus and Wayne in Detroit can go to the grocery store in peace, in the gas station in peace. We need to increase early childhood education funding so that people can get back to work and their kids are being taken care of adequately. We need to make it easier for people to merge into entrepreneurship, and we need to cut a lot of these regulations so that people can open and employ people. Because what we've learned in COVID is the number one thing that moves our economy is our local small businesses, and those are things that I will work on, and those are things that I think everyone listening say, I like that, I agree with that. But guess what? Those are Republican tenets. And those are going to be very easy for the Republican Party to support me in getting back to the district, because that's what they want for their district.
Enhancing education funding, you think, is part of the Republican Party platform?
Absolutely. Especially when it comes to early child, especially when it comes to giving school choice and giving parents a school choice, enhancing the education spending could simply mean allowing those per pupil tax dollars allotment to follow the child.
So you talked earlier about the number of African Americans who are incarcerated in this country and the tie back to the passage of the 13th Amendment and all of the things that have happened since then. How does that fit into your agenda in Washington? What would you do about it? And again, how would the Republican Party respond?
I would love to honestly change the 13th Amendment to simply saying that slavery nor involuntary servitude shall be allowed in the United States, period. No exceptions. In addition to that, we got to get back to family values. We got to get back to strong family values. When we had a black man and a black woman in a household rearing their kids, we didn't have this over-proliferation of violence in our communities. And I know my party talks a lot about, at the top, about family values, but we're not specifically saying we need to get back to black family values and crafting policies that encourage black families to stay together. And I think that's something they'll absolutely support. Then also, at a high level, the Republican Party, they don't have a Detroiter in their caucus. They don't have somebody from Chicago in their caucus. They don't have someone from Oakland in their caucus. They don't have someone from Atlanta in their caucus. They don't have anyone from Harlem in their caucus. So somehow they are in power. However, they do not need the African-American vote to stay in power. So for the first time, they will have someone in their caucus that is from the African-American community that they have become friends with, and that they go out to dinner with, that they maybe have a cigar with, that maybe they share a cocktail with, and they can say, hey, Bivens, I didn't know that until you told me that. I didn't know that this language affects this group of people until you told me that, because in my life, in my day-to-day interactions back in my individual district, I don't interface with African-Americans, so I don't know this. So they don't have anyone in their caucus talking to them about our issues, and they don't need us to move forward. So they don't craft policies for us. But for the first time, Detroit will be at the Republican table. And for the first time, it will be in the Republican Party's interest to keep Detroit at that table so that the party can stay in power.
So what tells you, based on the way that the Republican Party behaves now, that they are interested in the well-being of African Americans in Detroit or Chicago? What are you taking your cues from there?
You know what? When I had Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader, which will probably be the leader when he gets in, we were on Livernois. That wasn't even his plan to come to Detroit when he came. We were on Livernois talking about African American small businesses. And by the way, Livernois on 8 Mile to about the Lodge is the largest strip of African-American businesses in the country. We had Kevin McCarthy on Livernois because I asked him to come. It wasn't even his interest.
Right. But
for the first time, but, they will have... I'm sorry.
So visiting is one thing. I guess I'm asking about policy and legislation. What about the agenda of the Republican Party says to you they're interested in advancement of African-American businesses or African-American families? What makes you think they're interested in the well-being of cities?
My conversations with them, policies such as the Second Chance Act, policies such as enterprise zones, policies such as lowering taxes for emerging entrepreneurs, policies that remove red tape, policies that say you could send your child to whatever school you want to, that better positions the African-American community. And now I get to actually go in there and say, hey, let's craft some policies that's dedicated straight for the African-American community, because what Republicans are going to say is like, how did you do this in Detroit? And is this mimicable throughout the country? Is it going to make them say, maybe we should change our playbook?
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Martell Bivens, Republican candidate for the 13th Congressional District. We want to hear from you as well. What do you make of this 13th Congressional District race between Martell Bivens and Sri Thanadar, who won the Democratic nomination for the seat? Do you have questions for the Republican nominee who's with us now? Also, what do you think should be the political and policy priorities in that race and in this district? Do you think it's important that we have an African American representing Detroit and Detroiters in Washington, something that we have had uninterrupted since 1955? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Today on 101.9 WDET, I'm Stephen Henderson. As always, thanks for tuning in. Our guest right now is Martell Bivings. He is the Republican who is running for Congress in the 13th District, which represents Detroit and the suburban Wayne County. We're talking about his plans if he were to be elected in November, talking about how he fits into the Republican Party. We want to hear from you as well. What do you think of this 13th congressional district race? What do you make of the role race plays in how we choose who represents us in Washington? And what policy priorities would you have for the next congressperson from Detroit? 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Martell, I want to go back and talk about November of 2020, when a group of suburban Republicans came down to Detroit, down to where they were counting the votes in the presidential election, and tried to disrupt that process because they thought that there was fraud. They thought people were cheating. They were accusing African Americans of being part of some sort of conspiracy to steal the election from then President Donald Trump. I wonder, as a Republican, as an African American Republican, what that inspired in you. What did that moment say to you about Republicanism? What did it say to you about African Americans in the Republican Party?
I don't think there's a parallel with that in Republicanism. The Republican Party is over 150 years old, and I don't think that that moment on that day talks about our history, who we are, what we are, move forward. And it doesn't say anything to me about Republicans and the African American community. It's not a parallel.
But you have Republicans who have since that time maintained the position that Donald Trump won the 2020 election and that it was stolen from him in places like Detroit, and that voters in places like Detroit who are African Americans were somehow part of a massive conspiracy to steal that. It's not just that moment. It's since then that this has defined so much of Republican politics. In fact, most Republican hopefuls for office are asked that question. Do you believe that Donald Trump won the 2020 election? If they say yes, or if they say no, in many cases, there are consequences for them. So it is about the party, and it is about the party's politics right now, isn't it?
No, that's what media, many of your colleagues wants to shift our focus to, about a person who's not in the party, something that happened 4 years ago. I asked him the question several times. I don't believe the election was stolen. I worked at the Department of Election on Election Day. I typically work on Election Day at the Department of Election. I think there are a host of flaws in our election system that can be, I think the election was stolen. I would rather talk about the policies and what I want to implement in Washington while I'm in Washington, opposed to talking about it in the past.
This isn't the past. This is right now, Martell. Matt DiPerno, who's the Republican candidate for Attorney General, Christina Caramo, who's the Republican nominee for Secretary of State. These are people who are continuing this. And look, let's go back to January 6th of 2021, when there was an attack on the Capitol to disrupt the counting of votes, to say again, to perpetuate this idea that somehow there was a conspiracy that involved people in places like Detroit that robbed Donald Trump of the presidency. I just want to want you to reconcile that with your candidacy, if you can.
I have completely reconciled it. When I keep talking about what happened in 2020, or what happened on January 6th, or what Christina Caramo doing, or Matt is doing, that does not help liberate somebody on Mack and Bewick. That does not better position someone on Jefferson and Dick. It doesn't. I have people in my district.
But do you see what they're doing as an attack? Do you see what they're doing as an attack on those people? People who live at Mack and Bewick, whose votes they wanted to disenfranchise?
It is not. It is not. As the beauty of an American citizen is you have the right to pursue happiness. And if that is their pursuit, I hope they find happiness. But my pursuit is to make people's lives easier. I have people in my district who have tarp on their roof. I can't focus on what Matt is doing. I can't focus on what Christina is doing because it will distract me. And I cannot be distracted. I must be focused, and my resolve must be solidly focused. And I can't allow you or any other media people to take me from that focus.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't help. Me talking about Christina, how does that help them?
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get you to do is talk about how you, as a Republican representative, would work with these other Republicans who believe that Detroiters are vote fraudsters, who believe and who pursue policies and are pursuing policies now that would make it harder for African Americans to vote.
What's a policy that would make it harder for African Americans to vote? Give me an example.
Well, I mean, voter ID is. Let's start there. I mean, we know that's not about ID. That is about trying to make sure that certain people with certain kinds of backgrounds that make it harder for them to have the kind of ID that's acceptable to vote.
You know that there was a vote in the House that said that we would give people in Michigan, every Michigan citizen will have a free voter ID.
I do remember that.
Tanidar, mm-hmm. And Sherrie Tanidar voted against it.
He did.
Do you know that if I get pulled over?
There was a lot of other things in that bill, but you're right.
I'm looking for your office right now. I'm looking for your office right now. And do you know that if I got pulled over, my black self on Warren, and I'm on Cass and Forrest, do you know if I got pulled over right now and I have an ID, I can go to jail?
Mm-hmm. I do.
So,
I also know that it's very hard for people in certain circumstances to maintain consistent ID. You know,
so
in our community.
If I got pulled over right now and I say, hey, officer, it's really hard for me to maintain an ID. Please let me go on about my day. Should that officer say, keep on driving, sir?
No, but you think that's analogous to the right to vote.
Okay, then I was reared from my mother. You're not even supposed to come out your house without identification.
Okay.
There's a lot. So let me tell you something. I'm going to keep talking about voter. I have at my house right now 9 absentee ballots. I've owned my house for 5 years and lived there by myself. Why do I have 9 absentee ballots at my house? Now, if I really want to be for sure about where I can get 9 votes from, I can mail them back.
And do you think that that's...
I've worked at the polls on election day, and people have come in overwhelmingly and said, hey, I didn't mail my voting. I didn't vote by mail.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
mm-hmm.
coming here to vote. So when there's a host of people across our country, across our state, in our city that said that they feel like something is going on with elections, we as elected officials, we have to take them serious, sir. What they're saying deserves...
So you do think that there's voter fraud?
I don't think there's voter fraud. If I'm being elected to represent a group of people and I have an overwhelming amount of my citizens telling me something's going on with election, should I not look into it? So you work at the radio station. I don't know all your job duties. If your boss is telling you, hey, you need to do this and you need to do this and you don't do it, do you think your boss is going to keep you employed?
So you think that African Americans in Detroit want you to look into voter fraud? Is that what you're saying?
Many of them do.
Okay.
Many of them do.
Okay. Okay. It's an answer to the question.
But voter fraud. This is where we're distracted at. Voter fraud at a high level is not the main concern. Somebody sending their child to school to be educated. Someone being able to go to a grocery store and get prescriptions.
Sure.
Someone being able to go to get gas. And because many of our school systems within the district is not that strong, I have parents driving 35 miles to drop a kid off, to drive another 45 miles to go to school, to do that every day.
Hmm.
They're killing themselves on gas, but your main focus is on election integrity. That is what's keeping somebody lights on. It's getting cold in Michigan. Gas is going to be higher this winter.
My focus is on voting rights. My focus is on voting rights and protecting voting rights. You're right about that.
It's not an either or, though.
There are lots of other kinds of priorities as well, and you talked about some of those. I'm asking you about voting rights.
Voting rights is a very small concern when I knock on people's doors. We have over 550,000 registered voters city of Detroit. We had 75,000 people voting in the primary. Mm-hmm. Voting rights, not an issue in the city of Detroit. Let me tell you that.
Okay.
Come out and vote.
We agree on that. People should vote, and they should make sure that they vote.
No one is attacking anyone's voting rights in the city of Detroit. Yeah. We have Janice Renfrew. She is one of the most pro-black African-American people we have in the city. She is a hard worker. She is at the forefront of making sure African-Americans could vote in the city of Detroit. So we do not have a voting rights issue in the city of Detroit.
But we did we did in November of 2020.
And Janice Renfrew held it down.
She had to push back against a mob that was determined to disenfranchise those votes. Right?
They were not determined. The people that I've talked to, you see how we're talking about, we're distracted. This is a distraction conversation.
I have not heard anyone describe what happened in November 2020 as a distraction. I've not heard anyone describe it that way.
You keep on talking about November of 2020, but we're here in October of 2022, mm-hmm. and half my district is struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to keep talking about something that's not going to put food on the table, that's not going to keep people lights on, that's not going to raise the median income from $30,000 to $60,000. You want to talk about
that's actually not a very clever. That's not a very clever distraction of your own there to try to make it an either or between voting rights and economic issues. I mean, they're all important, aren't they?
If you and I just randomly went in any neighborhood in the city of Detroit and knocked on the door and talked about issues, mm-hmm. I promise you, I would write my mortgage. I would write the house. I'll give you everything I have. I promise you, nobody would say, I'm really concerned with what happened in November of 2020. I'm really concerned with January 6th. You know where I was on January 6th? I was on Houston Whittier delivering PPP.
Mm. Well, that's great.
This is not the top concern of Detroit voters.
Okay.
Because if this was the concern of every voter in Detroit, we would not have had 75,000 people vote in a city where 550,000 people are registered, sir.
Okay. That's all right, Martell Bivings, I really appreciate you being here talking about why you're running for Congress in the 13th Congressional District. Thanks for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thank you, sir.
All right. That's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to talk with Silicon Valley Congressman Ro Khanna about his new book, Dignity in a Digital Age, and how he believes our changing economy can be more inclusive of blue-collar workers. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.